Are you ready to rewind? Take a nostalgia-filled ride back to a simpler time. It's Acid Wash Memories, a retro pop culture celebration. And now your hosts, Joe Marotta and Michael Quinn.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 27 of Acid Wash Memories, a retro pop culture celebration. Today, we're talking all about Napster. My name is Joe Marotta, and along with me is the co-founder, Michael Quinn. How you doing there, Michael?
That's me. Hi.
Yeah. The co-founder of Acid Wash Memories.
I'm just turning on my internet over here.
Yeah, turn on that internet.
I need to set up a download for 10 hours for one song.
Folks, we hope it didn't take you 10 hours to download this podcast, yeah. But thank you so much for being with us here and setting up your internet. We are, if this is your first time, a retro pop culture celebration, which means each and every week we talk about various retro topics from the 80s, the 90s, even the 2000s. It could be tech. Today.
Tech.
Today is tech related.
Tech talk.
Tech talk. We've done food. Last week we did pizza. We've done baseball, video games. So if this is your first time, be sure to check out all the other episodes where, Quinn?
Over on the archives.
In the archives. So you can check that out. And also, if you have a Twitter, you can follow us there at AWM Podcast on Twitter. And if you have a Facebook, you can join our group there where we talk about the old things. That is Acid Washed Memories on Facebook. It's a nice time, Quinn.
It's very nice. It's so delightful, really.
Everyone's kind of nice to each other.
Yeah, everyone's talking about all the old stuff.
Yeah, there's no drama.
They're impressions of the old.
Yeah, they're impressions of Elvis, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
When are we doing the Elvis episode?
I don't know that we are, actually.
Okay. But big Elvis fans over here.
Elvis fans.
Oh, you look prettier than a fried peanut butter and nana sandwich, Priscilla.
Anyway, let's get to what we're talking about here, Quinn, which is Napster.
Now, which you can download Elvis on.
You can, yes, you can. Nowadays, if I may use this term, streaming music is ubiquitous.
Yes,
right.
As you always say, everything we talk about is ubiquitous on this show.
It is true. Obviously, those of you that grew up through the Napster rise and fall, you know the story. But we're here to talk about how we got there and how we got to where we are today. And Napster really played a huge role, Quinn, in where we are today with Spotify and Apple Music and all those things.
It's as important as LPs.
It is.
CDs.
Yeah, CD.
Cassettes.
It is.
MTV. It's very important to music.
And it was very short-lived, the Napster that we know and love, anyway.
It's true.
A couple of years, really. But in those early 2000s, it was a process to get music until Napster.
It
really was.
It involved going to Sam Goody.
Grab your holiday cash, go to Sam Goody, buy some cool CDs.
Before Napster, downloading music on the internet was a complete crapshoot.
You mean MIDI?
MIDI or Real Player,
yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah.
You know, MP3s were even somewhat new. But Napster opened the floodgates for streaming, if you will. A meteoric rise, a quick demise, but the lasting impact is still felt to this day. However, you know, we're well aware, Napster wasn't a streaming service.
No.
It was a peer-to-peer service. Now, Quinn, you work in IT.
Yeah, you always say this.
He doesn't. What is peer-to-peer?
It means that you're downloading it from another computer that you're equals on the internet, right? There's no, there's no like server. It's somebody has either the song or a piece of the song in some cases, and they're all sharing it, and the more people, the faster it goes, and that's how peer-to-peer works, right?
Right, so it's literally one user to another user.
Right, and therefore, they can get around, hey, we're just sharing, right? It's like, nobody's providing any of this.
Nothing to see. It's like trading, Pokemon cards. We're just trading here.
Just trading.
We're just trading.
I know you got Pokemon cards on the brain because you're your son, right?
Well, yeah, he's very much
into Pokemon
into
now.
Yeah, the Pokemon. Well, let's poke into the history here of peer-to-peer, because prior to that, you had to get files from a server via certain means like FTP, File Transfer Protocol.
Yeah, that's just direct. That's not a network of peers.
No.
In this video, we're going to be looking at FTP.
And that is old. I mean, we're talking 1972. Predated what we have today. When we think of the internet, we're using HTTP or HTTPS, which is Hypertext Transfer Protocol.
Right.
But way back when they were forming the internet, like when Al Gore was inventing the internet.
Yeah, this is when he was doing his work.
Right, and they were forming the tubes, because the internet is what, Quinn?
A series of tubes.
Right.
The internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Or a series of music, in this case.
A series of music tubes.
Musical tubes.
Musical tubes, like a tuba.
Stop.
We're sorry, folks. when they were forming it, file transfer protocol was part of all of this. It was by someone from India, a computer scientist named Abhay Bhushan, and it's server client-based, not peer-to-peer.
Right.
And initially, this is how old it is. It was command line only, obviously. It's before Windows, but it was even on Unix, like straight friggin' Unix kernels.
Yeah. And you can still get an FTP, like, client, and you can share files between two computers and your local network, things like that.
I'll have you know that back in my formative emulation days, maybe around 98, 99, I downloaded many a ROM.
Really?
Using an FTP client, yeah.
Interesting.
Now, Quinn, I do have a question for you as we get into this. I want to make sure that everyone is aware where we're going with this. Quinn, what is piracy?
Well, it involves stealing content, not paying for it. A pirate may steal something and sell it to somebody else.
Now, do they have to wear an eye patch?
They don't. There's modern-day pirates who wear suits or hoodies or something. Like, whatever that, like, don't steal commercial that the music companies made as a response to Napster.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't copy that floppy!
So piracy is taking things illegally.
Yes.
In its basis form, right? I think everyone listening here has done it.
I mean, maybe not
every single person. I've done it. Let's be honest.
I have never done it before. So I don't know. And do we have to shut this off now? I'm not sure. I've never taken part.
The straight conviction with which you said that.
Because it's true.
I've never partaken in that.
We don't do that around here Wash Memories, right?
I guess I've never done that either.
Yeah, Quinn. Who does that?
I don't know. Anyway.
We just heard about this Napster on the TV.
Well, I didn't have it or anything.
Yeah, we didn't touch that.
Computers? I didn't even own one.
Yeah.
Back to the FTP. So that it was kind of archaic. Obviously now it looks archaic. But it was a means of transferring files from somewhere to a user. Another method was Internet Relay Chat, IRC, which
that was fun.
It was fun.
Yes.
1988 by Jarkko Oikarinen, a Finnish IT developer. And Jarkko, when he was finished doing all this,
he moved to Finland.
He works for Google currently.
Oh, really?
As of 2011.
Good
but
for
anyway,
him.
Yeah. IRC, Internet Relay Chat, was an early form of internet chat rooms, instant messaging, group chat, and file sharing.
Yes.
Now, Quinn, again, because you work in IT, you would know that back in the late 80s, early 90s, the files that people were sharing, it was not music files, typically.
It was like text files or something. Or perhaps maybe even a rudimentary computer program that was a game.
Right, a very small file.
Right, yeah, we're talking like kilobytes, and if you were going big, it was a whole megabyte. Wow.
That's huge. That's
going to take forever.
That'll kill your day.
Check out this bad boy. 12 megabytes of RAM, 500 megabyte hard drive, built-in spreadsheet capabilities, and a modem that transmits at over 28,000 BPS.
Usenet came along, Hotline came along later, and these both allowed for direct file transfer as well. And then the files themselves became more useful in the music realm because, again, as we mentioned, you used to buy your music at Sam Goody.
Right.
That's where you got music.
On CD, which was digital, to be fair to it.
It
right? was. See, here's the thing. People figured out, hey, the music's on the disc digitally. What if we took it to the computer?
Good point.
They got it recorded digitally somehow. Right.
It already is digital.
Right.
So one of the first forms was the AIFF format in 1988, the audio interchange file format. That was an Apple format.
Right.
But it was huge because now you have, that's 88, you know, an audio format.
Apple was really early to the game with a lot of the audio and visual formats. They really were. Had a lot to do with also because they had a lot of editing software.
Yes.
That they were backing and propping up. So it was their business to make these formats, right?
You know? And they did a good job with that one,
right.
AIFF. Maybe some of you have heard of that. I mean, it's still a file. They don't go away.
File formats don't disappear. Yeah.
They just don't get used as much. And then the WAV format, which a lot of you are familiar with, that came about in 1992.
Now, the WAV, it is not a WAV per se like a tsunami. It's a file format that's like raw.
Yeah, it's not cooked.
So, meaning like the music, we're taking everything in this, right? We're not compressing it in any way. And so like one music file is like 10 mega, like more than that sometimes, like 50 megabytes
or
something.
For like a song, yeah.
For like a song, because there's no compression whatsoever. But the upside is especially for like mastering or for CDs where they had 700 megabytes, right? You can let it stretch out a little bit, and then the quality's higher.
Yes.
That's the benefit of WAV. It's completely uncompressed.
Completely. It's basically raw, like Quinn said. Right. It's just you're taking it, and it's going into a format, and it's exactly the same.
The way it was.
As the source, yep. Right. With no compression. However, in 1993, 1 year later, the format came around that is instrumental in this whole Napster thing to begin with. And we are, of course, talking about MPEG-1 Audio Layer 3, also known as...
MP3.
MP3 is a digital music format that was popularized in the 1990s when people would begin downloading songs off the internet. Most of those came in on MP3 format.
Now, Quinn, MP3 was notable for what exactly?
It was a compression method, and it's not the first. Like, there's MP2 and stuff for video, and MP1 even.
Yep.
But the thing with MP3 that was so remarkable is that it could take these WAV files and compress them down from, like, 50 megabytes to maybe 3 or something. But on top of it, usually, like, you know, you'd say to yourself, well, that's a lot of compression, right? That's, like, over 90% or something, right?
Right.
It's got to sound like shit, right? And that's the thing, is you compressed it, and then when you put it into an MP3 player, you know, it decompressed it, and it didn't lose anything.
That was the amazing thing about it. It is a lossy form, technically, but if
I'm sure you can listen.
It's lossy.
You can hear it if you know what to look for, but the common man won't hear it.
And the other thing, too, is that if you had it at a certain bit rate, like 128 became like the de facto, quote-unquote, standard, it could have been on a CD. It's not CD quality, right?
Right.
It's 128 CD, it's 256.
I thought it's 320.
It's 320, yeah.
But either way, the reason that 128 became popular is because the lower the bit rate, the faster the transfer.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
And so that was the benefit, was how low can we go, maintain the quality, but not... You know, and that becomes more important later for streaming.
Yes.
Because when you're doing it on the fly, the bitrate matters more so than when you're listening to it after you've downloaded
it. Once you've downloaded
it, correct. But the file is technically bigger when the bitrate's higher.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I ever came across like one of those, you know, 192 bitrate.
It's like, whoa.
It's like, come on now, buddy. Yeah. I don't have all day here. And then if you get like 96, you're like, oh, this is going to sound like trash.
Yes, it's crap. Like it's anything real. Under 100, just garbage.
It's real. So this MP3 format gained prominence throughout the 90s, and so much so that you might have heard of Winamp.
Yes.
That was released in 1997.
Loved my Winamp.
Oh, I loved Winamp. Yeah, software
customizable,
application.
Customizable, like the player, the skins, all the wacky ones.
I loved Winamp.
Winamp. It really whips the llama's ass.
You know what Winamp was great for, I thought, was like playlists. It could really, like, very quickly, you could just make a playlist. You could just drag drop files in, make a playlist. Or you could have all of your songs just in one big playlist and hit shuffle.
Yeah.
This was something that sounds so rudimentary nowadays. It's on every music player imaginable. But like Winamp, I don't know. I'm not going to say it's the first, because I'm sure there was other ones, but it was the one that gained the most prominence.
Definitely,
right?
Definitely for
and
a period
of time. And the customizability was another aspect that a lot of people liked about it.
Huge aspect. I mean, people love that. I loved it about Winamp.
And it was free. Yeah.
And then the first portable standalone MP3 player was released in 1998.
Yes.
So 5 years into the MP3 format existing, now we have an actual player.
The first portable MP3 player was the MP Man.
The thing is, we don't have Napster yet.
Yes.
And until Napster, it was a lot more sparse to find these MP3s, because here's the thing about them. As dumb as the sounds, I want to explain it. Someone has to make the MP3.
Somebody's got to record it, yeah.
Right. Somebody has to take the music off of whatever, a CD, a DAT transfer.
They have to rip it. As it's known in the...
That's
in,
the street lingo, folks.
I wouldn't say the business. I'd say the scene.
The Cosa Nostra.
Yeah,
no, I don't know what that is.
We have to rip it off the CDs, right?
You have to take the CD or, you know, again, a record, a tape, whatever format it's on, and you have to get that onto a computer.
Put it in a CD player or a CD drive on your computer, and you have to use another program that can rip it. And then on top of it, when you ripped it, it says WAV format on the CD, so you had to compress it back down to MP3.
To MP3. So nowadays, you can do this in 10 seconds.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And you know how to do it. And if you don't, you could look up how to do it.
And you know what's funny is that feature alone, being able to rip from the CD, was super controversial.
It was.
And now it's in like it's ubiquitous, Joe. It's
See?
Any like music player program, if you actually stick a CD in it to this day, that, you know, the software still exists. Maybe it's not used as much, but it's inside these players that able to do it.
Yeah,
right?
Windows Media Player does
iTunes
it.
Could iTunes famously does do it, right? Yep,
exactly. So people had to make these, and even once they've made them, finding them from the people that made them was very hard to do unless you knew where to go, or again, you were on some kind of a chat room or in a building of some kind.
Yeah, building.
And you and you knew where to get it from. Now, here's the deal. Napster came around 1 year after this first portable MP3 player. It was June of 1999 when it came out. Yep. And it was founded by two folks. Sean Fanning, 18 years old at the time, a computer programmer and an entrepreneur of sorts, and Sean Parker, who was 19 years old at the time. And Sean Parker, famously played by Justin Timberlake in The Social Network.
Yes, a future millionaire. When he made Napster.
No, but he became one. He was instrumental in Facebook in the very early part of it.
Drop the. Just Facebook. It's cleaner.
So Sean, Fanning and Parker here, they had only known each other since the mid-90s when they were teenagers, shared interest in music, and a shared interest in computers.
Right.
And they decided to create something. But before we get to Napster's launch here, I want to put a little bit of a time post on where we are in music right now. So CDs are huge, yes. Right? In 1999. That's the primary form. And this is, I guess, in a way, Quinn, maybe the spiritual successor to our CD episode.
Yes. But there's also an important product accessory to the CD I want to touch on, because I think it makes Napster super important.
And what would that be?
The CD burner.
Exactly.
It's a huge deal.
That comes into play.
Now, at first, this is kind of just a device for copying your CDs, perhaps, or if you ripped your CDs, making your own mix CDs.
Yeah, just backing them up, right?
But there was no true, like, how do I get a lot of music, right? It was just, I have two CDs and I want to put music of these two artists together and take the good songs and put it on one CD, right? It's like, it's basically all you could really do with it, because your entire source of music was commercially available CDs, right?
That's it.
You know?
That's what you would get, unless you went to some shady guy in a trunk or something like that.
Yeah,
that's
or you came have. It came from another friend who had burned a bunch of CDs and you ripped his CDs.
Yeah, good point.
With alcohol 120% or something like that. Yeah. Yes.
There's some important developments here. So the CDR, the MP3.
Yes.
It's a perfect storm. Two teenagers who had met and one's really into computers and they both love music. There's a lot of elements here that just mix together.
Emerging technologies,
yeah. Right? CDs becoming more expensive. That they come up with an idea, which is using the peer-to-peer technology or theory or whatever, of having people with the song, or as Quinn said, a piece of a song,
right,
being able to share it to another person.
Right.
And what Napster was the searchable index for that.
Right. It was like the client, meaning it's the software that just kind of gives you the window to all the other people sharing, right?
Napster wasn't actually directly hosting a thing.
And that was the genius of it, right? Was that it was really hard legally to have a problem with this.
At that time, it was.
Because
yeah.
Who are you going to sue? They're not distributing anything.
Right.
Like, technically, they just made a program that lets you connect with other people.
They're the middleman, basically. Yeah. They're the visitor center. They're just pointing you in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know, they're the
That's
welcome
where you
wagon.
Can steal this music.
Yeah. Stealing this way, two miles. No, but really, they are. They're just the matchmaker.
Right.
Essentially, that's what it is. They're the go-between. And if you haven't fired up your Napster in, 22 years or so, let me just remind you that what would happen is you would boot it up, and it's a nice, sleek, you know, very modern for its time program.
For its time,
For its time. And you would be able to literally search for, I don't know, let's say Radiohead, Kid A or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it functioned like any old search engine, right? It had a little bar at the top, and you could type whatever you wanted in it.
And then it would pull up a list of the file names
that were available currently, because remember, it's peer-to-peer. It could go away.
It could go away.
You know, like, it's like, these are the ones of people that have their Napster program on right now.
Correct.
Like, that's it.
And that are willing to upload. Because you could also turn off uploading.
Although
if you
by
to.
Default turn it on, because
they want you to give back.
I mean, the system doesn't work otherwise, right?
Yeah, you have to.
Napster's not hosting anything.
Exactly.
They're reliant on everyone turning the button on
it's
or
community.
Not turning it off.
It's very community-based, if you really think about it. So anyway, you would turn it on, and you would search for your thing, and then you would download it, and depending on the speed of your internet, perhaps 56K or less K. I have less K for a while.
It was mostly 56K when the program first came out. Broadband didn't explode until like 2 years later or whatever.
Yeah, it was on the very tail end. And then you would get the song. And you could start being an uploader once you had it if you wanted to.
I partially blame Napster also for accelerating the desire by people to want broadband.
Well, I mean,
like, why did you need broadband before this? Because, right, you were just going to text-based web pages.
For the most part,
no customer demand for high-speed internet, truly, until something like Napster.
Yeah, that's a good point. There was no streaming video. Good Lord. I mean, if there was, you were special.
It was a stamp. Yeah. Remember? It was like the real player, and it's like, it's a box with another smaller box
in
it.
Yes, it was either like, RealPlayer or QuickTime.
It's like,
maybe.
Hey, you want to watch a video Sega CD quality? Because it's going to take all day otherwise.
For 33 seconds?
Yeah.
So, you want to play some basketball.
So, Napster obviously specialized in the MP3 format because these were a very wieldy, handy, compact format for music.
Right.
So, that's what you were downloading. And again, the perfect storm here. It had only come about and gained prominence within the most recent years.
Right.
And now that people were starting to get CD burners, what would happen is they would download all their songs, perhaps arrange them in the order of an album that they wanted, and then they would burn the CD.
Some people, and everyone I feel like was different, and the personalization was nice, too. It's like, some people were actually just going, I want every song from the album, and I just want the album, right?
Yes.
Other folks were mixing it all up, making their own mixtape, just like the cassette days.
Right, yeah.
But, like, it was way more accelerated, right? Because now, any song you could think of, you could type in this thing. It's fascinating how quickly this network of people willing to share songs grew.
Because, oh, my goodness, it was.
Because this thing took off in like a couple of months. Like, it was like a phenomenon. Because they were starting from nothing.
Literally
right?
Nothing,
it's like, hey, if you got some MP3 files, just make sure to keep the share button on or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, don't, you know, just keep them in a folder somewhere. I mean, it got ridiculous to the point where it's like how Spotify is now, where you could search anything on Napster. It was crazy.
I remember, Quinn, being mesmerized when I first allegedly downloaded Napster, you know, started allegedly searching for songs.
Me too,
on there.
When I allegedly did it.
Right.
Yes.
You know, what was interesting about it, I guess we'll talk about the user experience here, is that there were a lot of mislabeled artists, and that's one of the funny things that people remember about it.
Yes, there'd be like versions of songs that you weren't sure if it was the right one or not.
Yeah. And you'd occasionally get like a shitty rip or it would glitch or something because the file was just, you know, made poorly.
This led to also people putting labels on their songs like true version or whatever, like, you know, in like brackets or something, like on the file name.
There would also be misspellings that would just never get fixed.
Yes, like Z's at the end for no, which is probably like the first person that uploaded it did that, and then everyone just never changed it.
Parody songs that weren't by Weird Al were always credited to Weird Al. Like any shit 2-bit hack parody song is Weird Al, the dick song, or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Ding dong, ankle spanker, pork sword, engine cranker, hairy hot dog, Davy Crockett, let them all hang out.
Head mates for genitalia, you know the girls think of them, and you gotta love them.
And he's even talked about it. He's like, a lot of these are really bad. I don't want my name on them.
I also remember the thong song for some reason having like the beginning part just being like, listen to my new song on AOL.com. And then it would start like,
I remember that.
Yeah, like, and it was like somebody ripped it from like some AOL like internet radio stream or something. Like,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
I
and it was on like
one.
Every version of the song.
That's what I mean. No one had Audacity yet to be able to cut that out and re-upload a new version. Despite all its quirks, and there were many. Well, I guess another quirk is that the bit rates, everyone looked typically for 128.
Right.
I remember.
Was it labeled at first? I don't even know if it was initially labeled.
It was in? No, because it would read the metadata or would read something. So it would actually be in the.
But anybody could write anything on the metadata.
Well, it pulled it from the file. I mean, isn't that embedded in the file then? Maybe not the meta
So I remember ripping my own stuff in the very early days. You had to fill all that out.
Like the ID tag,
They would fill some stuff out, but like I don't know if the...
the bitrate is hard-coded into the file information.
Yeah, it is, but I don't know if like the programs would spit that out, but like it wasn't an option just yet.
Right, eventually it was, because I remember I would always look for 128, And I was trying to download an album by a band named Pinhead Gunpowder, which is a
what?
Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day, one of his side bands at the time.
WWEWWF at the time. I like radio.
I could not get a higher quality version of like one freaking song. I had to get it in like 96.
That would happen sometimes.
Or 112. Yeah, and I was so pissed off.
You look at all of them, they're like, why are they all the same crappy version?
Yeah, and that's what would happen. It was just funny. And we want to hear your stories, folks, allegedly, of course. If you use Napster, what your experience was, did it blow your mind or what? And the reason this caught on so quickly, the reason it was so revolutionary, Quinn, is because this had never happened before.
Okay, so
there's no other way to explain it.
You have to understand like we were trying to set the stage before, but truly nobody had ever had access to this much music outside of a music store
for free,
right?
No that, less.
In their home,
yeah,
on a device in their home, and they could search whatever song they wanted, and they suddenly could find it and they could listen to it, right?
Yes, and all you do is click a button, and then you can walk away while it downloads.
And it's the program is super simple. It's just, here's a search bar.
Yes.
Here's a list of the stuff that you can download, and here's the stuff that's downloading right now. Three boxes, essentially, and it was very understandable how to use it.
The user friendliness, I think, was its number one component, because no one had done this before.
Right.
Again, by the late 90s, early 2000s, which is when this is, people were getting more familiar with computers, but no one, I don't think many people were in the habit of regularly searching for and downloading files to this extent.
Media in general.
Because
the thing with the internet in the early days, again, this is probably so hard for kids to understand now, is that everything was text or picture. If it had pictures, that was like the true, like, oh shit, like this has pictures.
Yeah, if you went to a website with frames on it, you were
territory. This was truly like, that's how rudimentary the internet was prior to something like Napster, right?
It was. It was the first of its kind, but it allowed access. I mean, it's, again, we're in gray territory here in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a little bit. But there was no precedent, so no one really felt that way.
When I first saw Napster, it was like the scene in The Wizard of Oz where in the internet's in black and white, and then suddenly it was in color, right? You open this up, and then suddenly my mind opens up to the possibility, could they put movies on this? I remember trying to see if I could game the system and seeing if somebody uploaded like a video file.
Did you ever find one?
I know on the later ones I did, like Kazaa or whatever. The people would do that.
But for the most part, you would find MP3s on Napster. And they did add a chat feature at some point. Remember that?
I don't know why. Who's chatting in something that it's like everyone knows it's not legal? Yeah. Why are you talking in here? Is there an unspoken rule?
Well, here's the thing, right? At first, no one really knew. 99 becomes 2000. We all survive Y2K. And Napster climbs and climbs and climbs in prominence.
Yeah. And I think this is actually important, too, because how did you first find out about Napster? Because I think that's part of the story here, right? Because I know how I did.
I think I found out about it because it was in the news for a negative reason.
Well, the funny part is I didn't find out about it. I saw people burning CDs and bringing them into school, and I started asking, how did you get that? And then they were like, oh, Napster.
I might have been one of those people.
I wanted to.
Allegedly.
Because, how I'm like a tech nerd, and even back then when
I'm
a kid.
Yeah, you work in IT.
All right. And back then I'm seeing the CD and I'm like, but how? My first question is, but how?
You probably asked me even.
Yeah, I might have said, I didn't even conceive of files. I'm I just see a CD that somebody made in their house and wrote on it. And I'm like, how did they do that?
So maybe I'm the one that introduced you to Napster and we never remembered this whole time.
It might be. I don't remember. I just remember that's how I knew.
Hmm.
I wasn't that. And I remember later the news because it blew up.
Yes.
Almost shortly after I started seeing the CDs pop up at school.
Well, that's a Streisand effect. What I mean? It was in the news and we're trying to get rid of it. We're going to talk about why. You guys know why, but this is called suspense. They magnified its presence by trying to get rid of it.
Right.
Napster is enabling millions of people to get free music with just a few keystrokes at their computers.
2000 was one of the big years for Napster, and that's when I discovered it was the summer of 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So 2000 becomes 2001, and Napster explodes in popularity. However, in the year 2000...
In the year 2000...
A band by the name of Metallica.
Forever villains of the internet after this.
The scapegoats of this whole scenario.
This was so annoying. Like, I immediately was like, I wish Metallica never existed. They rained on everyone's parade. Everyone was like enjoying this thing and they had to come and ruin it.
Well, the bell tolled for Napster, yeah. I suppose. Metallica obviously is one of the big four in the thrash metal genre. You guys know that. We're not explaining who they are. They're very popular before this. And yeah,
I understand
guess,
they're important or whatever, yeah, but they, you know, so what? Important. They're also important to killing the program that everyone was using to listen to music.
They found out that a demo of, at the time, an unreleased song known as I Disappear, very ironically, was on Napster.
Hope they disappear.
And then, and this is in March 2000, by the way, then they noticed, wait a minute, our entire catalog.
Yeah.
Is
that's how it works,
is
guys.
It's available on
it's
Napster.
Unspoken.
Right. Like, well, they spoke about it. Yeah. In March 2000, they filed a lawsuit against Napster, the first one.
My sentiments, I know I'm just joking, Joe, but people hated them for this.
Oh, they hated them.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Lars Ulrich. I was born in Denmark. In 1980, as a teenager, my parents and I came to America. I started a band named Metallica in 1981 with my best friend James Hetfield. By 1980...
Get the hell out of here!
This was like somebody like, you know, in the old speakeasies, right? If somebody was at the door of the speakeasies, it's over here, like pointing at the police, like, right? Like that's what it felt like, right?
Officer, they're bootlegging.
Yeah, that's how it felt. And like, I wasn't a Metallica fan, so I extra was like,
right.
Shut up. Like.
Well, we will have to see how this all shook out here, because Napster was riding high, climbing, doing very well into 2000. People were discovering it. People were sharing their MP3s. It was going well. And then a thrash metal band got very, very upset. Maybe rightfully so. We'll have to talk about why. So in the meantime, why don't you visit a speakeasy, perhaps?
Yeah.
Why don't you go download something, stream something, whatever the case may be? But we will talk about the second half, the fall of Napster, and what came after when more Acid Wash Memories returns. Right after this. No more.
Moo. Now's a great time to call 1-800-GATEWAY. Because right now you can get a great deal on a computer like the Gateway 500S. It comes loaded with an Intel Pentium 4 processor, 20-gigabyte hard drive, and a CD burner. And if you call now, we'll double the RAM for free. We'll even give you the choice of a color printer, a scanner, or a PC camera for free, too. You get it all for under $1,200, so call 1-800-GATEWAY now.
This is my house. I call it the Calhoun House of Cheddar.
This is my wall of cheese. I love cheese, as you can see.
Oh, boy. Cheddar England. Ground zero for us cheddar lovers.
If you love cheddar, nothing's more delicious than Wendy's Cheddar Lovers Bacon Cheeseburger.
This is my first cheesehead hat that I got from my dad.
Bacon, sautéed onions, and tons of cheddar.
To the man who put the two E's in cheese, Dave Thomas.
Come try Wendy's Cheddar Lovers Bacon Cheeseburger.
The big cheese.
And now Wendy's pickup window's open late, so you can eat great even late.
See you later.
And the battle to which I'm a part of is nothing compared to the battle of this next guy's fight. In the last year, this teenager has developed a technology that has revolutionized the way we all get our music, and he is here tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, creator of Napster, Sean Fanning.
Nice shirt.
You like it? You like it?
Yeah.
Actually, a friend of mine shared it with me. I'm thinking about getting my own, though.
All right.
I think we need to get on with this introduction as quickly as possible.
Yo, the sooner I can get off the stage, the better.
Yeah. You and me both.
And now we return to more Acid Washed Memories.
Hey, welcome back. We're still here, don't worry.
So they didn't take us
no,
away.
No, we're still here. Acid Wash Memories, episode 27, Joe Morata and Mr. Michael Quinn.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you guys for being with us. Reminder to follow us on Twitter and join our Facebook group to talk about your friends' stories of Napster.
Yes.
Not you, because you didn't use it, obviously.
Nobody here used it.
Nobody that is listening to this did. So we were talking about Quinn's favorite band, Metallica, and how they found out that their entire discography was available on Napster. Now, I do want to...
So is everyone's. Can they just...
Let's just make one point clear, okay? We are well aware of the ambiguous, if not outright, illegality of this. We're well aware of that. But if you weren't around at the time, which some of our fans are younger or maybe older and weren't involved, you have to understand one thing. Nobody cared that it was illegal.
Yes.
We just wanted the fucking music.
This is how I knew that it, like, nobody cared. Parents, teachers, like, no, everyone was like, I got it off Napster. Yeah. Like, it was like government officials. Like, like, it was just, it felt like an unspoken, like, we're all getting something here, right? Like, like, nobody wanted to speak up, right? Like, nobody wanted to say anything because it was like, this is too good to be true. All the music in the world, and it's at your fingertips for free.
And it turned music into, like, a public good, essentially. Yeah. Just everyone was doing this.
Right.
In fact, you know, the lawsuit was in March of 2000. That didn't slow anyone down. Napster's usage peaked in February of 2001.
Well, part of this also is once that made the news, people were like, Streisand, oh my God, effect. I need to go get everything before they take it down, right?
It's called file sharing. Computer users store their music collections, everything from the Beatles to Britney Spears, in their computers. When they link up with Napster, it then acts as a central hub that brings everyone together, allowing people to swap music computer to computer without paying a dime.
We're going to sue them and take them down. This company, Napster, where you can get every song ever, by the way, they're being sued by Metallica.
Make sure to download everything, like The Whisper.
Go get it now, it's free.
Yeah.
But that's what happened. And
it's just so funny to me that everyone, it was like an unspoken, like, everyone's just like, shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up. Don't ruin this. Like, stop.
Because again, folks, this was the first of its kind.
Right. And people just thought that this would get under the radar forever, right?
I mean, I'm 15 years old doing this. I'm sure it's illegal, but I don't care.
People who are 30, 40, 50 years old doing it, too.
Yeah, like, this is fine.
Nobody cared.
But Metallica did. And they sought a minimum of $10 million in damages. And they
that number alone, like, was like, shut up.
I know, just very much shut up.
Just shut up. Like, go away.
Well,
like,
how about this one? Remember you were talking earlier about how they go into the speakeasy and over there.
Yeah.
They hired NetPD, which is an online consulting security firm, to monitor Napster. And NetPD produced a list. Listen to this. Of 335,435 Napster users who are allegedly sharing Metallica's songs.
You mean everyone? Like,
well, that's 10%, because that's 1%. It was 30 million by 2001.
Yeah, but everyone that used Napster was that nobody knew even to turn this share off, because it was up on by default.
That's true.
I was not asked if I wanted to be part of Napster. I was not asked if Napster could throw our music into their system. That choice was taken away from me. So if we are going to sell our music on the internet in whatever way we so choose, we cannot do that if the guy next door is giving it away for free.
Now what they're going after here is copyright.
Right.
And again, I want to stress that in my adult age here, I understand. Listen, Quinn and I are content creators that have a Patreon for our wrestling show, patreon.com/OVP podcast. And there are certain things there that are only available if people are patrons. So if this stuff, and we're a very small time operation here, we don't have the millions of dollars Metallica did.
Yeah, no shit.
But if this stuff was getting shared illegally and taking money out of our pocket, of course I get it. Listen, you know, I completely understand.
Here's the thing, right?
That no one else talked about it.
Right. So the reason that people were mad at Metallica is because other artists definitely knew this was going on and they didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, or they did. They knew that, hey, you want to alienate our fans? Like, it just was like bad PR. Like, it would have made more sense if Columbia Records or whoever, like, did it. Then it's like, whatever. But the fact that a band did it, that felt like a knife in the back or something,
right? If the establishment did it.
Right.
If the Suits did it.
Right.
If the executives did it. You know, the ivory tower people.
Of course they would do it, right?
And Metallica can even fuck their way through, like, a fake speech like, yeah, we don't agree with this, you know, wink, wink. You know what I mean? That's an interesting point, Quinn, because someone eventually was going to do something.
Right.
This fantasy wasn't going to last.
We all knew that, but the fact that it was a band made it worse.
And, you know, such a a band that's like, oh, we're aggressive and we yell at our lyrics and kick your dick or whatever.
Yeah, we're breaking all the rules, right? And then go put your tie on and sue them. Get out of here.
Hiring Net PD.
Yeah.
Yeah, PD. So anyway, this 335,000 person list here was 60,000 pages, this list of the usernames, and it was delivered to Napster's office. And Metallica's whole demand here is, we want all of our songs removed from this Napster thing.
We can't.
And that we want the users that are sharing them to be banned. So over 300,000 users were banned.
I'm banned!
You're banned.
Somewhere along the line, some software leaked out that simply did something to the Windows registry key and allowed those same people to rejoin. While all of this was going on, Dr. Dre also sued Napster.
Right.
Same reason. But
again, why the artists? Right? That's what kills me. Bro, you're supposed to be rebels without a cause and all this crap. Like, this is not good PR.
Remember when Dr. Dre called himself that?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying, right? It's like their image is to be what the people downloading are, right?
Unemployed?
No, but like, you know, breaking the law and like all
this
stuff.
That's Judas Priest. That's definitely true.
I just mean to say it's like, it's just freaking weird.
Well, let me ask you a question though. Does Image pay the bills necessarily? I mean, they have a new album coming out, Metallica did, and they're like, oh, the demo from it is out, and now the album's just going to be free.
Listen, I totally understand the artist, but the system was broken on top of it, because somewhere along the line, the artist became more dependent on the albums than they did the touring. And that's
well,
all that
you.
But I mean, that started in like the 70s. The albums became more profitable than the touring.
AOR, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know what you're saying.
Right.
I mean, again, this was inevitable.
Like, if this technology came in the 60s, I don't think any artist would give a shit. In fact, they'd love this because they wouldn't.
Because of exposure.
Because, yes, they would send more people to the arenas and bars, or wherever they're performing. Yeah, they make more money.
So you're part of your argument is that, well, if they weren't so reliant on the fucking album, they could actually use this as free publicity, so to speak, or a loss.
And not to mention, an artist that's unknown might get known because they were found on Napster.
Well, see, that is one of the unintended side effects as well, is that, sure, it's going to take money out of the pocket of people with record deals, but what about the people without? You know, right. What if they get found? That's actually advantageous.
Right, and so that was like part of it here, and the fact that it was these big names, and it was like,
Dre and Metallica are huge
names.
Right,
but then all of a sudden I'm thinking, oh, they're uncool now. Like, I'm not interested in them. Like, you know what I mean? They're going to ruin this for everyone.
What I want to know, this is actually, you know how we always try to give our fans some things to tell us on the group and all that and on Twitter? If you were both a Napster user, allegedly, and a Metallica fan, what did you think of Metallica's lawsuit?
Yeah.
Because, like Quinn, I wasn't a Metallica fan. I mean, I appreciate some of their music now, but I wasn't into them when I was 15.
I mean, who wasn't kind of mad at them, right?
Oh, it was a running joke that they were a bunch of uptight assholes, especially Lars Ulrich, for some reason.
He took the brunt, yeah.
Because just look at him.
Yeah.
just look at the guy.
Come on, man.
Sorry. But you mentioned record companies earlier. Well, the story doesn't end there. Not only is it Metallica, not only is it Dr. Dre, A&M Records and 18 other record companies all sued on behalf of the RIAA,
right.
You know, the Recording Industry of America.
Again, I think this was a PR thing, by the way, is because finally when they formed the RIAA to like file lawsuits and stuff, that's when all of a sudden you stopped hearing about the artists. Because somebody, some PR, like, it didn't take a PR genius, but somebody appeared realized, this is a nightmare. Like,
right.
why would you attach the artists to these suits? Like, that, they, everyone's going to hate them. You've just destroyed their brand.
So you think of Metallica might have not jumped the gun.
Right. If they just waited for the record companies to do it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's who should be doing this. Not any artist, like, at all.
Well, you're 100% right. I mean,
and I know you're technically stealing from the artist, but at the same time, the artists have to understand that their fans are listening to their music this way, and you're taking it away from them.
Well, maybe someone saw the fallout, the public backlash. It wasn't all negative against Metallica, but most of it was. And
yeah, most people were like, F Metallica.
Yeah,
like, they became unpopular for a while.
What did you say before? Just shut up, basically.
Yeah, just shut up.
Like, deal with it through your label and shut up, right?
Yeah, just let the let the suits handle it, so we can be mad at like some vague like letters,
right?
RIAA,
faceless things,
yeah,
faceless acronyms and whatever, abbreviations. It was only 7 months later. So Metallica Suit was March of 2000. This was October, the RIAA one. And again, this is due to copyright infringement. Unfortunately for Napster, there had been the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which you might still hear about, the DMCA.
Like 95, signed by Bill Clinton.
98,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Now, on this particular date, Bill Clinton signs a Digital Millennium Copyright Act into law, and that happened in 1998.
It was relatively new. Had that not existed, could be a different story.
Right, but the DMCA also provides protections, for example, like... It allows, like, YouTube, for example, like, if somebody puts some copyrighted thing on there,
yes,
YouTube's protected because a user did it, right?
Correct.
So, it's kind of weird that, that Napster, where the users are technically doing it all, wasn't protected.
Well, yeah, because they're not.
Yeah.
They're not, that's peer-to-peer.
Yeah.
And that's one of the pieces here. While all this is going on, like I said, Napster now is peaking with over 26 million users.
It just blew up.
During the lawsuit era, because more prominence. Oh, wait, I can get it all for free? Are you kidding me?
And it's going, like, they're probably going to lose. Like,
yeah.
That was basically the consensus. Everyone was like, everyone knew this was illegal. It was just like prohibition. Like, it's very similar. It's like, everyone knows this is illegal, but they don't think it should be.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? But so they're going to just go do it.
Listen, I mean, we're giving you a bit of a humorous take on it. We understand the legality, but what the fuck, teenager, adult, whatever, wouldn't want all
music
the music
listener,
yeah, like, at your fingertips for free? Why wouldn't you jump on
of
that?
Of course,
you know it ain't right, but why, of course, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, the Metallica outcome is in March of 2001, and the injunction is that Napster has to find a way to filter out all the Metallica songs, which they did their best to do, you know, for that period of time.
Yeah, and then everyone starts labeling them differently.
Well, yeah, obviously a trick. And then the outcome of the big lawsuit was July 2001. So again, remember, Napster was formed in June of 99.
Mm-hmm.
We're only 2 years and a month into Napster's life here, and the settlement reached is that Napster has to block music from being shared from any artist that did not want their music to be shared. And unfortunately, on July 11th, 2001, Napster shut down the entire network because they know they cannot comply with this.
Yeah.
They know they can't do it.
It's a user-based thing. Like, right. There's nothing they can do.
There's nothing they can do.
So this happens, right, Joe?
Yes.
The corporations start to come in. They realize there's 26 million people who want something like this, right?
Yes. There's settlements being paid out throughout the fall of 2000.
Right.
Napster very briefly tried to convert to a paid system in order to help offset the costs of the lawsuits.
Yes. I think that this pay thing is super important to the next step here.
Yes, even though it didn't work, as we know, it did not work.
But somebody else had a bright idea with this.
That would be Bertelsmann AG BMG. Now, that's a large German conglomerate. They wanted to purchase the rights to Napster because they see the bankability.
Right.
And they were going to offer $94 million for it. Okay, and this is in 2002.
You know, if I'm the Napster guys, I'm like, sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but it's like, this is...
fucking take it.
Yeah, just fucking take it,
go
right?
Go ahead. But in June of 2002, the sale was blocked because the judge ruled that the deal is unfair because Napster's CEO, Conrad Hilbers, was a former executive for Bertelsmann. Therefore was kind of playing both sides. Thus, Quinn, Napster was forced to file for the elusive on our show, Chapter 7 bankruptcy.
Ooh, that's a rare one. Not 11, huh?
7. Yeah. That's the liquidation bankruptcy.
That's the one you're screwed.
Yeah. Everything's
no
gone.
No coming back.
But other people do get involved, Quinn.
Mr. Steven Jobs decided, hey, that was a good idea. Hey, we can make a MP3 player and we can make software that sells music, and it looks sort of like Napster, by the way. Like, did you ever notice the similarities?
Because Napster was the first one.
Right.
How many songs, Quinn, can you fit on this thing?
1,000 songs, I think, was the original marketing.
And where do you put it?
In your pocket.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
This amazing little device holds 1,000 songs, and it goes right in my pocket.
Yeah, the first iPod.
Yes, the first iPod. This was a big deal. Now, we talked and we said, hey, there was MP3 players before, but there wasn't with this kind of space. And this was the revolution. 5 gigabytes of space in 2001.
That's huge.
And we're talking like 2 months after the fall of Napster.
Yeah,
here.
It's huge.
It comes out in October. And this thing blew up.
Absolutely.
Because they released with it iTunes.
Yep.
A program to allow you. It was a very easy interface to allow you to connect to the iPod device, and it didn't matter if you had Windows or Mac. They made it on both.
They were huge.
And people now had existing libraries, right?
Yep.
That they downloaded from Napster, and here's a product. It fits in your pocket, and you can put all your Napster songs on it.
1,000 of them.
And it has a headphone jack, so you can hook it into a stereo, headphones, whatever you want to do with it.
Absolutely
right?
Brilliant capitalization on the whole scene.
But what makes it the truly smart product...
The coup de grace,
is gras. That... A lot of gras on this one. on the iTunes program, not only is it an interface to upload songs to your iPod, but if you click on another section of it, it will sell you every song at top tier quality, like you're getting it at the record store, like from a CD, for 99 cents a song. And that price point was a big deal, believe it or not. That might sound crazy.
That's a great deal.
Because the CD would sell you, what, 8 songs for $20 at this time?
It could be up around 20, yeah. 18, 20.
You could get 20 songs for $20.
Yeah.
Like, this was huge.
And
the quality is... CD.
It was CD quality, and it was legal.
It was legal. You didn't have to worry about it getting shut down. It's Apple.
And the artists and their labels were happy about it.
Right. And actually, believe it or not, this is a little fact that I've always heard about this, is that the record companies fought really hard to not be 99 cents.
They did.
They said it's worth more. And Steve Jobs said, no, it isn't, because Napster just happened. Your industry's going to go out. Like, people are going to find another way to steal it if you don't do this now.
100% right? On the money.
He got him to do it, and that was the way music was primarily sold for a long time after the fact.
Was through
iTunes.
Yeah.
Before the streamers came along, right?
Yep, and now there were attempts to recreate the magic of Napster. In the meantime, while all of this iTunes stuff is going on the pirated side of things, you know, the underbelly here, one of the early ones was Morpheus, 2001 to 2007. Yes. I want to mention up front, all of these things stunk.
After Napster, it was a wasteland, right? It was like a bunch of these programs that were like, we're going to be the next Napster, right? So you had like Kazad, Morpheus, and all this freaking bullshit, and like none of them are as big as Napster, so like, remember, we're peer-to-peer, right? So the network is what matters.
Exactly, yeah. The program can be great, it could be garbage, but
some of them were good, the programs,
good.
Yeah.
There was SoulSeek, which had already existed in 2000 while Napster was active. Didn't do much. Went down into 2021. SoulSeek was around it too. LimeWire, I'd say there's LimeWire and Kazaa are probably the
Kazaa
two.
Kazaa was actually truly like Kazaa. You know what I liked about Kazaa?
I didn't like anything.
Did you not like Kazaa?
I did not like it.
Kazaa actually felt like it was Napster, like the program. I mean, it was professional. Like, it wasn't garbage.
Well, I guess so. I mean, the funny thing about Kazaa, right? March 2001.
Uh-huh.
They see the writing on the wall with Napster that it's inevitable. So it comes out. They are sued almost immediately in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Which is very funny. Like, yeah. We know this shit by now, fellas.
The law now knew what to look for, right? It was like, in the immediate aftermath, there was like 600 Napster ripoffs.
Exactly.
Right?
They tried a subscription-based deal themselves. The biggest thing I remember with all of these pieces of shit, a lot of them came with malware.
Yes.
Spyware. They were slow and clunky. You're better off.
Slow your computer down, too, because of the malware.
Yeah, you're better off handing your computer directly to Anonymous, so let them have it. It's in better
shape. Do you remember, like, that there was, like, you had to answer 60 questions before you installed it? Just to get past all the, like, malware, and then sometimes it still would install malware, even if you said no to everything.
But this is the speakeasy getting shut down, and now you got to buy your hooch from a guy under a bridge.
And the alcohol might be poisoned.
That, exactly, like, or Rancid or something. Yeah. That's what LimeWire and all Kazaa and all that was. By the way, Kazaa kept having legal issues. $100 million settlement for reparations to the recording industry.
I mean, like, it was upsetting because Kazaa felt like promising. It was the least shitty of all of them. LimeWire was kind of the close second to me.
Yeah, I mean, I had Kazaa. I just felt like I could...
You didn't like Kazaa, huh?
I
you...
felt like I could never really find anything on it. I was like, where's the stuff?
No, I was fine with Kazaa. Kazaa was all right. But still, again, it was not Napster.
No.
All this shit was not
Nothing
Napster.
Nothing ever was.
And like, the crappiness of it was slowly, very slowly, as I was starting to work and have a disposable income and stuff, was slowly be like, I'm just going to get it on iTunes. Like,
right.
This is freaking dumb. Like, this is just a waste of my time like on this shit.
That's
right?
A good point, Quinn.
Right?
No, you're right. LimeWire, by the way, was 2000 to 2010. Again, similar. But less people are using all these. LimeWire was sued in 2005 by Arista Records. Lost that suit in 2010. And that was that.
Did any of these ever win a suit?
I don't think so.
It's just like understood they're illegal. Like,
yeah. I mean, how are they going to win?
Yeah.
What exactly are they going to win? There were other places if you needed your illegal music fix. There was Pirate Bay. You know, which had other things, too.
But that was Torrents, which was another...
Exactly.
By the way, I would have never discovered Torrents if it wasn't for Napster. Here's the thing, is that the thing that Napster opened the door to is that other forms of doing this kind of stuff.
Yes.
Right?
Other media,
right.
So to speak.
Right, so, because it started to move to music, and then remember when they figured out, or maybe they didn't figure it out, but somebody figured out to put VCD inside the CD burners,
yes.
And then you could download like MP2 videos, and like it would be like full movies or some shit.
MP2,
yeah, and it was funny. And you burn them to a video CD.
You were all,
and the quality was garbage.
You love that though. You did it all the time.
Oh,
right?
I thought that was so cool. I was like, I was like amazed because your initial impression of CD is like it's not for video,
right?
Right, but then you know, you do a little research, you realize it's just data. It doesn't give a shit what's on it, as long as the file can fit on the thing.
It doesn't care.
Right? And so you can compress stuff. And so what did people do? They just compressed video and put it on a CD.
Yep. I definitely bought a few VCDs burned, you know, on the internet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I definitely did. I might have. I mean, but obviously, streaming is where we are today. For those that, and I'm not being condescending, if you're unaware of the difference between what Napster was and streaming, with Napster, you're downloading the file to...
You had to wait to download the whole song.
Yeah, to your computer. You don't get to preview it. I don't think it had buffering or anything like that. Streaming is essentially, it's buffering, meaning you're playing it as it downloads, Quinn.
It's downloading it as you're playing it.
Yes.
And it's also not saving it on top of
Correct.
It. So it's like as it plays, it's gone. But with the speed of the internet keep getting faster and faster.
Right.
It can go and seek and it can keep some stuff in its buffer,
right.
Obviously.
Yep.
But like once you're out of the song, it's gone.
It's gone.
Right.
Low quality streaming was available in the 90s and it was usually like internet radio and stuff like that.
Broadcasting from San Jose on IATA.com, it's the Wrestling Observer Live with Dave Meltzer.
But as the speeds of the internet began to increase, partially perhaps due to Napster's influence.
Or at least the marketability of that as a product that people will purchase.
There you go, the commoditization of it. Streaming became more and more popular. Been around since the 80s, you know, QuickTime, Real Player. But when the internet got faster, when Napster went away, when people got malware from Kazaa and all these things, they had their iTunes. But other companies cropped up with some cool ideas. One of them was Pandora.
Yes.
Streaming radio.
So we'll stream you a radio, right?
Yep.
And internet radio had been around. I think it was even part of in iTunes somewhere. There was like a radio section.
It was initially, wasn't it?
iTunes was pretty, as much as some people hate Apple like a lot, whatever, right? But like iTunes had a lot of crazy ideas in it. Like,
true.
Like on top of this, like, oh, we just invented a music store with reasonable prices, right?
That's their biggest.
Podcasts were in there. That was the first place that had a podcast directory.
Now, what is
still,
a podcast?
which you're listening to right now. It had a radio. It had internet radio.
It did, you're right.
And also, it was a compendium of like all the internet radio stations that existed, which there was a lot.
Yes, there was.
There was like surprise. It's Apple later like changed it and had their own like real. It's terrible now. But
remember
like
IATA. Sorry. Remember
that? There was so many cool.
There was so many
internet radio stations and like you could listen to music like radio stations that were streaming from like Europe and stuff. I was like, this is so cool.
Zach Live was Sacramento's first internet radio station. It started in 1999 by me, Alex Cosper, and my business partner George Grady.
What Pandora did was took that concept and they would do it in a way where you'd lock into like a genre perhaps, and yeah. you could do a like button or not, or a dislike, and it would try to learn your listening habits, but it wasn't, you weren't able to pick. You
couldn't replay the song. That was always the, oh, this is so annoying. Right.
You couldn't say, I want to listen to Ironic by Alanis Morissette.
So it felt like, in essence, it was an innovation, but on top of it, they were taking away an aspect to it. That's why I could never really get into Pandora, right? I was like in all these iHeartRadio and all of them.
That's another one, exactly. Yeah. Companies like Amazon with Amazon Music, SoundCloud, who was streaming, they were both companies where you could search for something, which is what you could do with Napster, right? And then stream it. You didn't have to download it. But obviously, this was all perfected, in my personal opinion, with Spotify in 2006.
So the innovation that Spotify, there's a couple of things with Spotify.
Yeah.
Spotify is actually super interesting because it came out of the blue. When it was in development, the thing that was focused on was how fast could it play the song?
Yes.
And it's something a lot of people forget about nowadays, right? They don't even think about it, right? The song just starts.
Yeah.
But Spotify was developed with there was some kind of study done that if something takes too long, somebody will lose interest, even if it's like milliseconds or something. And they were trying to hit like some, I forget, it's like 8 or 6 milliseconds or something. You didn't have, it would seem instant to the user, right?
When you click play.
When you click play. And the focus of Spotify's development was hitting that number.
It's a genius idea.
And they hit it. And it took a lot of work, a lot of, they compressed it and speed, all this bullshit, right? On top of it, I believe Spotify, there's a documentary about it, but it was also, at first, it was developed by guys that wanted to resurrect Napster, and they were like, it's got to be free or whatever, right?
Right, yes.
But they were talked into, because the record companies saw the product. I think they felt they could work with the record companies, that the record companies would give them permission to play it for free or something.
Yeah.
But everyone said, like, there's no way. The money people fought with the founders, and eventually they came to the idea, and this was like the first of its kind. What if you paid $10 a month, which on its face seems sort of expensive, maybe a little bit, but when the product came out, people saw what it was and the amount of music, because they had all these deals because they were initially working with the record companies anyway.
Yes, right.
Because the record companies, the thing that the record companies like was the play, it plays fast. They couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing.
A lot of record people who hated MP3s and stuff, they saw this. One record executive put it like, it's like the jukebox. Like, it's wild. Like, it's just, you hit play and it just plays it, yeah, right?
It was insane.
Right? And like, and it's anything. And you type, and that was the demo. It was type anything you want and then hit play. And you know, they were asking like, what is this? Are you just directly connected? Like, how is this even working? And that was the innovation, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's on a server a million miles away. So they do the subscription model, and that is, again, that seemed like a risk, but the product was just so damn good.
It's worth $10
when it came out,
yeah.
Right?
And they had a free version also with ads.
They did.
You know?
They did.
But if you think about it as a price point, that's 10 iTunes songs a
right,
month.
And people might have already been doing that.
Yeah.
But I still think it was a risk.
It was a risk.
Coming from the Napster world, because that really, iTunes was contentious already. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, but
this
it was
is true.
It was affordable, but it was contentious.
It was like, contentious,
right?
Yes.
It was like, is this really the happy medium? Like, I think people were searching for, like, what really is that in between.
Well, they better not download Morpheus or they're
right,
gonna get a
yeah.
virus. You know
yeah.
what I mean? And
it can't. I guess the point is, it couldn't be free, but it also couldn't be too expensive, and there had to be some kind of way to find it. And iTunes sort of found it, but it wasn't the final form.
Yeah, I mean, Spotify, if I may be so bold as to say, I believe is the gold standard when it comes to this. I know that there is Apple Music now.
Apple does a commendable job.
But they took their cues from Spotify,
right.
is the point I'm trying
yeah.
to make.
And you know what's funny about Apple is that they had to adjust their iTunes business
yes.
to that. I gotta hand it to them.
Yeah.
Most large corporations would have fought that. They switched to what, within 2 years? They opened up Apple Music, Spotify.
They were
pretty quick to the take.
Spotify, yeah. Let me just clarify the time frame. So Spotify was released in 2006, but it really didn't break out until the early what is the last decade called? The teens, the 2000 teens
right.
decade, and Apple Music came out in 2015.
Okay, so Spotify, that's like been 5 years.
Yeah, that's roughly. Probably about fair, which is not that long in the grand scheme of things.
I thought it was so surprising because there was no competitor to Spotify. Spotify was begging for a freaking competitor.
Yeah, because like I mentioned SoundCloud earlier, but that wasn't intended to be a competitor. That was for new artists to put their stuff for free and have people discover it. Like Bandcamp is another one.
I argue that had something like Apple Music not come out, or what are some of the Amazon Music,
yep.
That was needed because Spotify could have raised the prices.
I mean, eventually.
They did, but I'm saying that the fact that there's now multiples, that's probably what's keeping it at a reasonable level.
Well, competition, yeah. But at least Spotify kind of codified and standardized.
They standardized how it should work.
It should be easy to find everything, and it should play right away.
Yeah.
And you should be able to make a playlist if you want to.
The one hole Apple Music did fill was one of my biggest frustrations with Spotify. There was a feature on Spotify that if you had an MP3 of the song that you maybe bought from iTunes or bought or got even years and years ago on your computer, and if it wasn't on Spotify, if you had your computer on, it would let you stream it on the go, right? But you had to keep your computer on. I always thought this was such an oversight because so many people had digital music that they owned, and it was bull crap that you would lose your library. And what Apple did, the feature they introduced was to fill that gap, is they said any music you own, and there's no limit on it. As long as you're an Apple Music customer, if you upload it to our cloud,
you can stream it.
You can stream it anywhere.
That's true. Yeah, Spotify, it's very wonky to play local files on Spotify. It's like a big pain in the ass.
It's the one thing that Apple did. And I don't know, does Amazon do it? Maybe Amazon does it. Yeah, I don't use Amazon, but I don't know if now that's like some of the, and Pandora. What's the one? I'm thinking of the one that Jay-Z bought that sucked. Sonar, Solar, what? Tidal. Yeah. Yeah. Which they were like, oh, the quality's better. And then
no one cares.
But it was funny, within like 2 years, like Apple and Spotify increased their quality to match it, and it didn't freaking matter.
It didn't matter. No one cared. Yeah. There was another one too in 2001, in the midst of all this, known as Rhapsody Music.
Yes.
Rhapsody was a streaming service eventually, and in a bit of serendipity, in 2016, was bought and rebranded to Napster. So Napster is currently a streaming service that...
Does anyone even have that?
Nobody uses.
I can't believe it still exists. So we come full circle. So Napster...
Now they are
a thing.
They are a cog in the wheel of the machine that they helped invent.
Yes.
How's that for a mixed metaphor? And it's very interesting because...
Who even owns... Rhapsody owns it?
Napster owns Rhapsody. And they rebranded to Napster now, the streaming service.
It was previously owned by Best Buy, too.
Yeah, well...
it's random.
You know, without Napster's influence, Quinn, despite the fact that they weren't a streaming service, I don't know when we would have arrived... I mean, Steve Jobs is quick on the draw. I don't know when we would have arrived...
He is, truly. It's scary.
When we would have gotten here, because obviously technology evolves at its pace and things happen, but if you think about the convergence of factors we mentioned at the top here, where, okay, the MP3 has become more and more commonplace, and even existing to begin with to be a small portable way to share music files.
CD burners came out.
CD burners came out around the same time.
And CRW and all that.
Right.
And also, CDs in and of themselves got too expensive.
People started to get disenfranchised with the music industry, as they often do. That's cyclical. And then two Shawns, who were friends and like computers and music, they have an idea. All of that converging around the turn of the century, the turn of the millennium even, Metallica getting pissed, and then Steve Jobs and others doing their best to capitalize on this discovery, right?
Yes.
That Napster did. I mean, they accidentally walked ass backwards into what became the way we consume music to this day.
I think Napster has a wider influence than even that.
Keep going.
The concept that you can get everything in one... Everything.
The on-demand aspect.
The more content than you could ever consume just at your fingertips, right?
Great point.
Napster was absolutely the first product I ever touched that felt like that.
Same.
I think it has a heavy influence not only on iTunes and Spotify and Apple Music and Tidal and all that bullcrap music, but it absolutely is the first thing to introduce this concept that would then be applied to video with Netflix and all
Hulu
of that.
And all them.
Because again, it's the concept of look at all of this stuff and you just hit download or what download in Napster's days, but later.
Yeah.
I mean, Spotify essentially is a spiritual successor and everything really is.
Everything is.
But anything where you can get media is what I feel like. I feel like Napster, even though it wasn't video, mm-hmm. it's the prelude. It's the first of its kind that it was like, wow, look at all of this.
Look at all of this.
And
yeah.
I can just press it and it just works.
For 1999, right? That was huge.
Right.
That cannot be overstated how huge that was.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we could do a separate episode on the video streamers, but like.
Maybe we will one
because
day.
It's essentially applying the Napster concept to video.
Sure.
But, you know, with a different method, the subscription method. But still, it's still crazy.
Yeah.
That, like, how influential Napster would be to that, to everything as far as media is concerned.
Well, it's true. And, you know, there are some that would bemoan the streaming age. And I understand that because there's still many proponents of collecting physical media. And I think the two can coexist peacefully, personally.
Yeah, but as we discussed in the DVD video one.
And the CD one.
The ease of use, right?
Right.
Is like the ease of use, the on-demand nature, the like it's so quick and you don't need to own an expensive thing.
Right.
Like you just, if you have a computer or a phone or whatever.
Yeah, literally.
Like it will just work.
And the other thing too, from the artist, like, yeah, no one's getting paid like they were in the 70s and 80s from record deals, but
yeah.
The discoverability now, how many bands have I gotten into that I wouldn't even have had access to or thought to look at?
Well, it indirectly drove the music industry back to its roots of concerts and stuff
right.
like that, right?
Yeah,
like,
and those tickets are a little expensive now, huh?
It sure as hell broke the dependency off the records.
Right.
Right? And it said, oh, well, that's not a viable thing.
Right. And I'm sure the royalties and all that for streaming are not even touching what they were getting back in the day.
Absolutely
but,
not.
But more
And that's
people,
a controversy in and of itself.
It is, and we're not here for that one. But more people are now able to discover artists and listen to them at the touch of a button because Spotify is so quick,
yep.
You know, or whatever, that it's been great. And then you could find people that you've never listened to before. And I want to hear what, you know, Creedence Clearwater Revival's last album sounds like. And you just
Why was everything on Napster by Creedence Clearwater Revival? There was like a part of a labeling problem that they.
Wait, did that happen? I don't remember that.
Yes, absolutely. There was a ton of stuff that it was either Creedence or Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young. And there was like a ton of stuff also that was like allegedly by Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, and then it's like Billy Joel or something. And it's like, what?
It's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I think that without Napster, we would not have what we have today. It really did. It was a paver of the way for a Spotify, for an Apple Music, Quinn. It was illegal.
Absolutely illegal.
We all knew this, but.
But out of that illegality.
Yes.
Came a truly, truly great products that we probably would. Not it changed everything right for us, like as far as consumers of media.
I really think so. And most of all, though, it was just a fun, wild time.
It was
short-lived. It felt like your parents were away for the weekend and you're throwing the greatest party ever.
No, it felt
ever.
Like your parents were away for the weekend and then you were having the party and then they came over and they were like, I want to participate in the party, because that's what I mean. It's like it was like everybody was like, everyone looked the other way. It was wild, right?
And Metallica showed up with the cops.
Right. Jerks.
They're having a party there. They don't have a permit.
It's like the whole world was having a party.
Except Lars Ulrich.
Young and old.
That is true, though.
Yeah.
Folks, hey.
Authority figures, even.
That's like, true.
The cops, some of the cops are at the party.
That's
right?
Up to cops that take a, you know, take a hit of the funny stuff.
Yeah.
Folks, let us know your party stories with Napster if you used it. I mean, I know very few people did. But, you know, if you happen to use it or maybe you know somebody that did, let us know. Let us know what you think of the whole deal in general. Hey, are you a Metallica fan? And did you like when they sued the Napster? Or were you like, hey, come on, dude.
Nobody liked that. If you did a poll, that like, do you agree
one
that they should have?
Will.
Like, it'll be a 99% like F Metallica.
One person will. It'll be Kirk Hammett. Anyway, thank you guys so much for being with here on Acid Wash Memories. We will, of course, be back next week for something completely different.
Yes.
Don't you worry. But until that time, be sure to follow us on Twitter at AWM Podcast. Join our Facebook group and leave a review like Alyssa's going to tell you in 1 second. One way or another, thank you so much for being with us here, and we will see you next week for more Acid Wash Memories.
See ya.
Like what you heard? Be sure to leave a review and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. We will see you next week.